originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Good afternoon, everyone, and once again, welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. This is indeed Trainer Talk, and it's all presented by our friends at Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Happy to have you with us on Sirius 219 XM Channel 206, and of course, all of you listening around the world with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Welcome to the program here tonight. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, along with my usual entry mate on the show, that is the Ponta for the Pick Four, Jude Feld. We are hosting this show live from the Fasig Tipton Saratoga Sales Grounds in Saratoga Springs, New York. Our producer, Lee Delapina, is back in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. The reason that we are here in Fasig Tipton and in Saratoga is because we had the privilege of bringing you coverage of the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale the last couple of evenings here on the network. And what a sale it was, JT. Gross and average prices soaring to the second highest in the history of this sale. And this is a sale that's been going on for 97 years.
Yeah, well, it's a really nice group of horses they had here. And all the important buyers were here, as they like to say all the time, repeatedly, ad nauseum. But it was a great sale. The rain didn't seem to hurt anybody opening night. And last night was fantastic as well. So it was a pleasure to be here. It's always a fun show to do. We get to visit with our friends that we don't see year-round, and it's really cool.
And we're going to do that for you over the course of the next hour. We'll tell you about our special guest momentarily, but Jude, just for the record, for people that may have missed it, for the 2 days, Fasig Tipton reported 156 horses sold. They sold for nearly $53 million. That is up 16.3% from a year ago. The average price rose 16.3% to $339,712. And only 38 horses failed to meet the reserve, which made the buyback rate just 19.6% compared to 23.15% a year ago. Gainsway topped all consigners. Kerry Radcliffe Bloodstock was the leading buyer. So across the board, everything very positive.
Yeah, it was great, great for our business and also great for our guest tonight. That means more horses he can train.
Yes, it does. Break, train, whatever it is, he does it all. He is Randy Bradshaw, somebody who has trained 363 career winners, including several greatest stakes winners that you're going to hear about tonight. In the 1980s, he worked as an assistant to Hall of Fame trainer D-Wayne Lucas before eventually going out on his own and trained such standouts as Patienville, Urbane, Artax. Wow, it was just incredible for Randy when he really had it rolling back in those days. And he's with us today as the person who operates RKB Breaking and Training, which is located in Florida, just north of Ocala. Randy, thank you for the time, my friend.
Mike's pleasure, Jude. Jude's been a friend a long time, so it's a pleasure to be here.
Happy to have you on board. And, boy, thinking back on that career and thinking about some of those names that we've just heard, what a ride.
Well, it was quite a ride, you know, and I thank Wayne Lucas for my kind of my rise, because, you know, at that time he was really rolling. Karen McLaughlin and I were actually hired within a couple of weeks of each other, and a couple of the first assistants. And it was just a great ride, I'll tell you. We were on some really great horses, and you know, we got to, you know, get a little bit of notoriety from that. So it's great.
You got to excel early on. You know, when I first met you, you had horses at Turf Paradise, and then switched over to California and trained there for quite a while. But working for Wayne seems to be a key for many successful trainers, yourself included. Talk about that experience and what you took away from that.
you know, I always get a kick out of Wayne. He always tells people, he said, you know, I only ask my guys to work a half a day, and what they do at the other 12 hours is their business. But you know, Wayne was great, and 12 hours was a short day working for him. I mean, you were at the barn at 4 o'clock, and a lot of times you run stakes races and stuff, so you got done late in the day. But the experience was unbelievable, and Wayne was so great to work for. I have some of the best memories of my life working for Wayne and with great guys like Karen and Todd and Jeff Lucas, who's gone now. But Jeff was very instrumental in Wayne's operation, and really for all of us trainers. I mean, he taught us a lot. He's a great trainer in his own right.
What I think's really cool about all of you guys that work for Wayne is you still root for one another.
We do.
You're a really tight-knit group, and I think that's really cool.
Well, that was Wayne's theory about everything. It has to be a team effort. And so we were – if Jeff Lucas won a race in New York, we were all compensated. If I won a race, you know, wherever I was in the Midwest, Churchill or somewhere, we all got a piece of the action. So it made everybody come together and be a real team. And we're still great friends to this day. I mean, I send a lot of horses to those guys, and I talk to them all the time. But you couldn't ask for a better bunch of guys to work with.
It was the original Share the Upside program.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Everybody shared in the wealth with Wayne Lucas. We had a chance last year, Randy, when we were here in Saratoga, to sit down with Wayne at his barn, and we spent an hour on this very same show talking with him, and it was one of the most amazing hours that we have ever spent. What is it about a guy like Wayne Lucas that just makes him so good?
You know, I think when he first came into racing and come over from the quarter horse world, which he was a world champion quarter horse trainer too, I think he just raised the bar. As Jude will tell you, his barns and the way he did things was nobody'd seen it in the thoroughbred world, you know. And we started flying horses back and forth. He was one of the first guys that probably flew a lot of horses from coast to coast, and it was so successful. But Wayne's probably, and I tell people this all the time, probably the most charismatic person I've ever met, you know, and I worked with him for a long time. But he's just one of those guys. I mean, I've heard him get on the phone, sell horses to guys, and you'd want to buy a piece before he got off the phone, you know. But just a great mentor, and I love the guy to death, you know. And still to this day, I mean, I talk to him, I break horses for him. And when you call him, I mean, he sounds like 40 years ago. I mean, he's still upbeat, gets on that pony every day, and so, no, he's a great mentor for sure.
Tell me about walking into his barn for the very first time and getting a chance to meet him.
Well, you're wild just because you walk in the shed rows. I mean, nobody walked in the shed rows. I mean, because they were crisscross, herringbone, you know, and you don't walk down the middle of the shed row. You walk around the side. And at that time, Jude probably remembers, we did this deal with, they made pillows out in front of the stall. It was like a half moon. And they laid every straw in there perfectly. It was the most amazing looking thing. It was so impressive, you know, when you walk down the shed row. But you didn't walk down the middle of the shed row. It's always on the side, you know. But because Wayne's a stickler for detail. He likes detail. And so, you know, every stable you go to, his always had the flowers and everything.
Yeah,
but
you mentioned he raised the bar, and it was true. Like, people, when he first got there with the wrought iron chairs and the fancy signs and all that stuff, and
yep,
people were taken aback. You know, they used to have a stable beautification committee at Santa Anita. Well, you know, that meant maybe you had a pot of pansies that you bought at Home Depot and put them in front of your office. But Wayne comes in, and he's got like a forest and a place to sit, and it was just unbelievable. So the whole stable area got better because people just felt like, well, this guy, look at this over here. It looks like a, you know, a palace, and here we are just sitting there, no grass in front. Everybody started planting grass and flowers and the whole nine yards. My son, Miles, he was like 5 years old when he learned how to rake the shed row in a herringbone pattern. And Wayne rides by in the pony one day, and he sees Miles doing the shed row. He says, I want to buy that kid. But everybody started doing that. And the pillows, I remember Frankel took over the pillow thing, and everybody had these beautiful pillows in front and laying down. Otherwise, you look like a jip.
Yeah, you did, no doubt. And Wayne had these Vince Lombardi signs all the time. He loved Vince Lombardi and the sayings that he had, and they had them plastered all over the wall. So he was really about detail and making sure that the horse was well taken care of. And I'm telling you, those stalls had so much straw in them. I mean, I felt sorry for a groom because they were bedded so deep. You know, it was a lot of work getting them cleaned out. But Gosh, it was great fun.
Visiting with Randy Bradshaw here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Randy, you mentioned that those years with Wayne provided you with some of your most memorable moments in the sport. What are a couple of those moments that come to mind when you think back on it?
I think the very first moment was when Winning Colors won the Derby. I mean, first of all, she was a filly, and at that time I was in Saratoga. I had 60 head of two-year-olds up here, and at that time we didn't know we had Open Mind and Is It True and a bunch of really good horses up here. Nobody knew who they were because they were just two-year-olds at that time getting ready to run. But when she won the Derby, I can tell you it was, we was in the hotel room, jumping on the bed and screaming and hollering. You know, it was a great moment. But there's been so many. We won a lot of, you know, Derbies, Breeders' Cups, and Preaknesses, and Belmonts and stuff. But you know, it's some of the horses you know that you're around are just they're like the who's who's. You know, one of my very favorite fillies was Family Style. You know, she's a 2-3-time world champion, and she's just, you know, so much heart, so much try, you know, and some of those horses really endear themselves to you over the years, you know, how great they were. We had a horse called On the Line, probably. I don't know if you'd remember him, but he was one of the toughest horses. You know, he's just one of those horses that could deal with pain. He had like 4 screws in 1 ankle, but he made over $1 million after that. But, I mean, he was just I remember one day at Del Mar, I took him out to run him, and we let him out of the stall, and he kind of stumbled a little bit, and we took him over there. He ran a mile in 1:33 and change. I mean, he was just one of those kind of horses that, you know, that was so tough, and you have so much love for those kind of animals.
Yeah.
Did he
belong to Gene Klein? Was he Gene Klein's
horse? He was Gene Klein's, yeah. Big chestnut horse, a lot of white.
I love that horse. Yeah. And I hadn't thought about him in a long time. I'm glad you brought him up.
Yeah,
he was really
Mehmet.
Cool.
Yeah, might be the only horse that Mehmet had, but
yeah.
He was a good one.
Well, my clients, Elizabeth and Jerry Vallone, they owned Mehmet, so that was a big deal to them, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was great. And the owners that we've had over the years, you know, were great owners. Gene Klein was one, like you mentioned, and great guy, and you know, just we had probably the who's who of clients at that time, and they were just great people to be around, and we always had like I said, it's just fun when you got a stable full of horses like that. Like I worked with Jeff in the winter a lot of times, that when he'd come out of New York and go to Hollywood Park, we'd have like 60 Greatest Stakes horses in the barn over there. I mean, it was incredible. But it was a great time for sure.
Randy, let's go back even further than that. Where did the love of horse racing begin for Randy Bradshaw?
You know, we had a ranch in Wyoming, my dad, and my uncle was a trainer in Arizona, and so my dad always loved the horse game. So he got with my uncle. We bought 7 brood mares and a stallion, you know, and tried breeding a horse in Wyoming. That was pretty tough. So we took a step up. We moved from Wyoming to Utah. my love of horses started there, and I galloped horses. I started when I was about 11 years old galloping horses, and I rode some races for a few years in the bushes of Utah and Idaho and Nevada and stuff like that. And then eventually, as I got old enough, Uncle Sam called, and I went to Vietnam for a little while. And when I came home, I worked in a couple of different jobs, but I always my heart was with horse racing and being around horses. So I finally called my uncle one day, and I said, I really want to go to work with you. His name is Lyman Rollins, and believe me, he was a great horseman. I don't care whether it's Arizona or anywhere. He's the most patient guy I've ever been around in my life. So anyway, I went to work for Lyman and got started there, and eventually went out on my own. I got a really, really fast horse equal world record at that time, and 6 furlongs, 107, and won a horse called Petro DJ. And he's probably still to this day probably one of the fastest horses I've ever been around in my life. I mean, you hear people talk about horses going 44 and change, stuff like that. He never went 44. He went 43 all the time. I mean, he was a terrifically fast horse. And he kind of got me started going to California. And eventually I got a couple other good horses and just migrated over there and ended up training in Southern California.
Yeah, and from there, it's just been quite a ride for Randy Bradshaw, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Was it always horses for you then?
Always.
Was there ever anything else?
Always. No, always in the back of my mind. That's what I want in my life. Yep.
Well, Petro DJ, he was an amazing horse and aptly named. I always thought he had usually, you know, you name a horse Petro DJ and they come from the clouds, you know.
Yeah.
The big closer.
Yeah. He was usually in front and they had to catch him. I mean, I think he run 107 and changed probably 5 times. I mean, there's not many horses done that, so. He was a very fast horse.
And it's so great for a trainer to have a horse that brings his A game and shows up every time. They might not always win,
That's
but they
right.
bring that A
every
game
time.
Every time.
Yeah, it is so fun to have a horse like that. Jude knows. I mean, those kind of horses really do endear themselves to you. And I don't care if a horse is a $5,000 claimer or whatever it is. If they try every time, you just love them, don't you, Jude?
Yeah.
I mean, they're just – they give you their heart and soul every time you lead them over there, and you just love them.
So. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, of course, I trained more of those than Randy did, but you know, I had a horse named Family Fox. He was by Bob Mathias. He was an Oregon bred. I don't even know how I remember this, but he was so crooked. The day I claimed him off of Ted West, the day I claimed him, I go, what did I just do? I mean, this horse had legs at every different angle, and he walked out of the stall like I look now when I get up in the morning. Oh my God. But was he a trier? Every race he would fire. Every race. I mean, he just never didn't try. And yeah. those horses like that, they're so few and far between.
They are.
You know, and he was my favorite, you know, cheap horse, because he just never said no. Never.
Yep. I had a horse kind of like that in Arizona. His name was Credit Man. And he was literally almost blind in both eyes. He could see out of one a little bit. And he had an, I claimed, same thing, young guy, you know, you don't know a lot about claiming horses, but I claimed he had a flat fractured knee, and he was bowed. And but I'm telling you, he's one of them horses. He let him over there. He was a come from behind sprinter, but he went the last quarter like 22 and change. He won so many races, but he was a neat horse, but a little quirky for sure.
Yeah, that's what Family Fox was too. Late running sprinter. That must be the key.
It must be the key.
So you have things rolling with Wayne. Everything's going well. You're learning a lot. You're around a lot of great horses. What eventually leads to the decision to say, okay, I'm going to go out on my own?
You know, it was a point I had the Midwest division. I did Hot Springs and Churchill and those places, and finally I just decided it was time for me to go out on my own. So at the end of the meet at Churchill, I called Wayne. I said, look, I think I'm just going to, you know, try to go out on my own, and I bought a home in Hot Springs, Arkansas. And you know, I tell people this all the time. You don't realize how tired you are till you get away from it for like a week. I tell you, I couldn't get out of bed for the first 3 weeks. I didn't realize how tired I was, because you just get up every day and you hit it and you go, you know. And the thing about racing is you get that adrenaline rush all the time because you're running horses, and so it gives you that momentum to get up and do things every day. But I realized how tired I was. And so I got out of the horse business for about a year, and I went to Idaho and got into tree spade business with a friend of mine, my horseshoer, Keith Bowen from California. His brother had a construction business. We got together up there and got in about a year, and I looked at one day and I got like $8,000 in the bank, and I'm thinking, how am I going to make it through winter? We haven't even got one dime from the company. I said, how am I going to make it through the winter? And lo and behold, Gary West called me, and Gary said, hey, he said, Gene Klein's assistant gal told me that you're the best, and would you think about coming to work for me? So anyway, we made a deal, and I come back to Southern California and started running horse for Gary and Mary West.
Did you find when you were away from the game that you started to really miss it?
You know, for a while I didn't, because, like I said, I think I was so tired that I didn't miss it. But eventually I did. So really, like I said, it's always been my passion to want to be in the horse business. But I think at that point in my life, I just needed a little break and eventually got back to it.
Yeah, working for Wayne can be quite a struggle. Yeah. Kieran told us last summer up here that when he first went to work for Wayne said, you know, I'd like you to be here at 4 o'clock, and Kieran said, no problem. So he gets dressed early, and he's at the barn at 3:30, and he goes, he's going to beat Wayne to the barn, and he walks in, Wayne's sitting at the desk, and he says to Kieran, where have you been?
That's true. I mean, you know, he'll call you wherever you're at. He'll call you at 4 a.m. You better be there.
Yeah.
And be to work. So,
well, it was always interesting for me to be on the West Coast. You were probably in the Midwest at the time, and you know, Jeff had horses in New York. But you'd go to Wayne's barn, and I always was early to the track, usually 4:30 or whatever. And sometimes I'd walk in Wayne's barn and sit with him and just listen to him talk to you, talk to Jeff with that big board with the, you know, all those horses on it, which were household names all over the country, you know. But he would have to get there early because of the time difference to talk to Jeff before training,
right?
And then you'd be the next one, and he'd just work his way from East Coast to West Coast.
That's right. No, he still does that to this day, you know. I mean, you know, he's, what, 80, he's going to be 82 years old, and, I mean, he's there every morning.
Yeah.
So
first guy on the track. him and Eddie Keneally
yeah.
at Churchill every morning. There's two guys that have the horses there. When the track opens, Eddie Keneally and Wayne, and that's you can set your watch by it.
Yeah,
you sure can. And, you know, Randy, you mentioned his son Jeff, who sadly left us far too soon. Yep. And every assistant trainer that has gone out on their own that we've talked to has said, you know, Jeff was an integral part of that operation. And when we sat down with Wayne last year, he said the same thing. He said he was such a big part of everything that we did. What made Jeff such an integral part?
For one thing, Jeff was brilliant. I mean, he's one of those guys that was extremely smart. And you know, at that young age, to really understand horses, because he really hadn't been around Wayne a whole lot as he was growing up. But when he came to work for Wayne, it's amazing how the learning curve, how quickly he got up to speed, you know. And I think Wayne's whole program, I mean, most of us came up really more underneath Jeff. So he taught us about, you know, we don't work horses fast. I mean, grade one horses work no faster than a minute. You know, if you go a half mile in 47, you're probably going to get a phone call from him. And Jeff was so smart. He looked at every work where we were every day. And if you worked one fast, if they had a fast work, you were going to get a phone call, you know. So it was a very structured outfit to work for, but it worked. The way that they trained horses, more like probably Jude and I would train fillies, you know, not real hard, because I'm one of those people who thinks that a horse is a perfect athlete. I think a lot of them, we overtrain a little bit, and I think always less is more, because if you and I go to the gym, we probably got to go there a couple hours a day to work out to get fit. A horse goes to the track for 5 minutes and gets fit. So that basically tells you they're pretty much a perfect athlete. So I've always been about doing less and not more. Once you get a horse fit, keep them happy, keep them in the feed tub, keep weight on them, you know. And it's to me, it's not rocket science. If you do those things, you're going to be successful. And I think that's what Jeff Lucas did. I think Wayne's always been a great feeder and a great caretaker. But I think the fact that we didn't overtrain horses, and they really thrived in it, and that's why we had so many great horses.
Yeah, I think that's true. He used to do a lot of jogging. You know, you'd see the horses jogging, and when they galloped, they were controlled. You didn't see like the Laz Barrera 2 minute lick thing. And,
right.
I mean, every trainer has their own style.
They do.
Right? I mean,
no doubt.
There's a million ways to train a horse, but
there is.
But I think in general, the main thing you do is keep the horse happy. You know, you talked about fillies. I always say, cannot tell a filly what to do.
Yep.
Women, fillies, treat them the same way.
Same way.
Let them call the shots, and you'll be fine. When you start telling a filly what to do, it's all downhill.
It is. Guaranteed. So. We had a lot of great fillies during those times, like Lady Secret, who was a great filly. I don't know how many grade ones she had, 16, 18. I don't know. She had a ton of grade ones. But she never galloped faster. Our standard gallop was like, say, like 18 seconds per eighth mile and stuff like that. And they weren't fast gallops, but they were enough to keep the heart rate up, you know, and get horses fit. Works weren't overdone, but it really worked. I mean, it's been successful this day. I think if you add up all the money that Wayne's assistants, Dallas and Todd and Mark Hennig and all these guys, if you add up their statistics and how much money they've made over the years, the system has to be tried and true.
It's amazing, actually. And did you incorporate a lot of that stuff when you went out on your own, or did you have a mix?
No, it worked so well that I stuck with it, Jude. You know, and every horse is a little bit different. It was kind of standard. Sometimes you know one needs a little more. Like if you got a really tough horse, a horse I'll bring up is Dynaformer. He's one of the toughest horses I've ever been around in my life. I mean, he was so tough. We only had one guy that could gallop him. I mean, he was so tough. And our standard gallop, like I said, was about 18 seconds. Well, he was a little quicker than that. But we never galloped horses too far. But he was a mile and a half because he was so tough all the time. You know, and he needed that because he was a very good horse. But most horses, like our fillies, our general gallops, or if they were light filly, hard to keep weight on, was a mile. Regular fillies was like a mile and an eighth. And like most of the colts were like a mile and a quarter. And Karen and I talk all the time, and he sticks with that, and I'm sure Todd does, because it works, you know. So you don't try to change
reinvent
things.
The wheel.
Exactly. If it works, you stick with it. So that's what we've done. And like I said, there's the individual horses sometimes need a little more, or a little less. So you just have to gear it towards those horses.
But. Yeah, well, people these days, they talk about their program and that, and of course Wayne, the inventor of the program, but I'm sure you guys adjusted to little things.
I mean, you do.
Because that's part of the business anyway. And you can't just train every horse the same way, but you can have a general idea of where you're going.
But
that's the key, is to stick with your stuff. And that way, when you go on a losing streak, which, of course, Wayne Lucas hardly ever did. He did a couple times, maybe.
Sure.
He didn't win a race during the week. But I mean, you know, when you go on a losing streak and you have that program, that's such a great thing to fall back on.
Yeah.
You don't get worried or nervous that you're doing the wrong stuff.
Exactly. And, you know, White was one of those kind of people that would always pump you up. Like, the first year I went to work for him, I went to Canterbury, and I won, like, 31 races at that meet, which was pretty good. I think the Jenks Byers, the guy, Mike Green was the other guy, they were, like, 33 and 32 or something. So we were right there, and I thought, wow, this is a pretty easy game. Then I went to Keeneland. I won, like, two races, you know, and it was such a different deal. But Wayne always, when I'd call Wayne, he said, hey, look, you haven't got the best horse there. Just stay in the buggy. Keep doing what you're doing. It'll come around. And he was right, but he's always the guy that would pump you up. He never tried to tear you down and say, oh, you're doing a bad job and you're laughing stock. You know, he'd always say, just stay in the buggy. It's going to get better.
That's great.
And it has gotten better. It's gotten better for our special guest, Randy Bradshaw, here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Randy, what's it like to see your name in Sports Illustrated?
Well, that's always great. But, you know, those accolades and things are great. But I'll tell you, the best thing about this business, the horses for one thing, but the people you meet in this business, there's so many characters and great people. And I think my associations I've made over the years with people are probably one of the greatest things I take from this. I mean, there's just so many great people in this game.
Yeah, for people that don't remember that and don't know what I'm talking about, it was in 1998 when Randy was featured in Sports Illustrated as one of the top 50 horse trainers in America. Top 50.
That doesn't sound pretty good.
I think it sounds great.
You think about the number of trainers. That's an elite group.
Yeah.
Who was ahead of you? Do you remember?
Well,
which 49 guys? See,
but you know, at one time I was like number three or number four in the country. You know, and so it was fun, and it's you know, the thing that keeps you going. You have to have really good horses. Everybody thinks this guy's a great trainer or this guy's a great trainer, but the thing that makes you a great trainer, great horses. I mean, they really do. I mean, all we can do is take good care of them, but the horses are the ones that make us famous, and we have to give them all the credit. So.
Yeah, it was. That's interesting you say that, because we had Anthony Bonomo at the sale last night, and he said people say to him, oh, you won the Kentucky Derby. He goes, no, I didn't win the Kentucky Derby. My horse won.
That's
and
right.
And you hardly ever hear an owner say that, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, the horses do it. We're just participants with them.
Yeah, we're going to continue our visit with Randy Bradshaw here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, in the second half of the show. Don't forget, if you miss any portion, you can head to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast of this show and all of our Trainer Talk shows. Also, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. We're back with more live from the Fasig Tipton sales grounds in Saratoga Springs, New York, with Randy Bradshaw on Trainer Talk, and it's all presented by Fasig Tipton.
The inaugural Fasig Tipton Turf Showcase takes place Sunday, September 10th in Lexington, Kentucky. An exciting addition to the Fasig Tipton sales calendar, the Turf Showcase is the only yearling sale in North America exclusively for horses with turf appeal. Did you know that nearly 7,000 races were run on turf in North America in 2016? And more than 40% of graded stakes this year will be turf races. The demand is growing, so don't miss your chance to buy a yearling with true turf appeal. Sunday, September 10th in Lexington, Kentucky. Visit FasigTipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Rossellaia, one of the names in the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Shackleford, who still leads. Here's Nero on the outside, and Animal Kingdom is pouncing late under John Velasquez. It's now Animal Kingdom on the outside, who goes the lead for John Velasquez, and he's going clear by two lengths and running to the line. Animal Kingdom wins the Derby. Nero in second. In third came Mucho Macho Man. In fourth was Shackleford. And then Master of Hounds, Santiva, Brilliant Speed. And then Pants on Fire and Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion and John Velasquez who took Derby 1:37.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, continuing our visit with trainer Randy Bradshaw, and that was Mark Johnson with the call of Animal Kingdom and that big Kentucky Derby victory. And as we were listening to that replay, Randy was over here to our left, and he kind of pumped his fist a little bit and said, Animal Kingdom, I broke him. And you know what? He did, and he's been around so many good horses, just absolutely tremendous. What a moment that must have been for you.
It really was, because you take a horse and you break him and you get to the Derby. It's so hard to win, you know. And funny story with that, you know, he's actually got kind of a turf pedigree. So Barry Irwin called me like the two weeks before the Derby, and he said, you know, Randy, you think this horse can run on dirt? And I said, Barry, I'm telling you, that horse gets over dirt very well. I said, you'll be just fine. And so he called me about a couple of days before he's going to work at Churchill, and he goes, you think this horse, you sure he can do this? I said, look, I think you're going to be just fine. You know, they worked him at Churchill, and he told me it was one of the best Derby works that week, you know. And so I was confident he was going to run well, but who's ever confident you're going to win the Derby? But I was confident he'd run really well.
Well, if anybody would be confident that they could win the Derby, it would be you, because you've been around a bunch of them. But
what
but
was
that's
he like
really
as a
cool.
baby?
He was tough. I mean, tough in the gate. I mean, to get him out of the gate and stuff, he's a little bit on the resentful side, you know, when he was a baby, kind of pinned his ears with stuff, you know. But I think as he got older, he got a lot of that stuff, you know. Some of that's just colts, you know. Sometimes they say, no, I'm not gonna, they're like a 16-year-old kid. No, you're not going to make me do that. If I don't want to do that, I'm not going to do it. But, you know, I worked him a few times. And then I sent him, and I had another really good horse by Leroy DeThonimo called Bad Leroy Brown. And I actually thought Bad Leroy Brown was better than Animal Kingdom at the time, because he was a big, imposing horse. He was very, very talented. I sent him both to Wayne Catalano, and after Wayne had him for about a month, I called him one day. I said, Wayne, what do you think? He said, you sent me two monsters. He said, you know, they're really good horses. And, you know, I feel bad the fact that eventually, you know, Barry made a little change and sent the horse to Graham Motion. And he won a Kingland going a mile and an eighth, and then Barry said, look, I want to give him a little break. I'm going to send him back to you. So he sent him back to me, and I had him till about January. Got him up, got him breezing again, and sent him to Graham. But Graham did a great job with him.
Yeah, he certainly did. And you weren't alone with the Bad Leroy Brown thing, because Robbie Alvarado was working them both, and he told Barry that Bad Leroy Brown would absolutely crush Animal Kingdom.
Well, but, you know, in his first race, and you know, they don't show you all the time horses galloping out. And, you know, I think he ran, second or third, I think first time out. And so Barry called me after the race. He said, did you see those horses gallop out? And I said, no. He said, Randy, he opened up literally 20-something lengths on the field galloping out. Mm-hmm. Very talented horse, but he ended up getting a throat issue. And you know, he still won graded stakes and placed in graded stakes, but he probably wasn't near the horse he could have been.
Yeah. You know, when you went out on your own, Randy, your first graded stakes winner, I guess, was Patientville, right? Was he the first big horse to come along?
He really was. He was a really small horse, and I always tell people, they always worry about size. He was a small horse, but it's not about the size of the horse. It's about how much heart and fight they have in them, and he was a neat little horse. You know, I won three derbies with him, and then first time I run him on the grass was in the La Jolla. He won that a grade two at Del Mar, but he was not a big horse. Lady Secret was a small horse, so I never worry about size on a horse, you know, because it's all about how much fight they got in them. But he was a cool little horse. He and Artax both were the kind of horses you could haul somewhere. And you know how some horses will make you nervous because they don't eat, or they don't, you know, they're a little nervous going into a new place. Those horses are the calmest, never worried about anything. I remember Artax, the day before the Derby, I took him over on Oaks Day, which is a huge day, and 100,000 some people there, and I schooled him in the paddock, and he never went here. He cocked a hip, just looked at everything. He was the coolest horse, you know, and Patientville was a lot like that too. Great horses have great minds, usually.
I got a feeling the Artax might have turned a hair when that person ran out in front of him at Pimlico, huh?
I'll bet that guy turned a hair. That horse would have killed him. Artax was a big horse.
So what's going through your mind when you're watching that?
Oh, my gosh. Race? I was thinking, this guy, he wanted to commit suicide because, obviously, this horse is like, he was like 16-3. He was a huge horse, probably weighed about 1,300 pounds. If he ever hit you, it was all over. So, anyway, it was, anyway, hope they committed him.
Yeah, he deserves that.
Yeah, Artax was so special. I mean, that wasn't his day, obviously. He ended up finishing fifth that day, but he finished his career with three consecutive Grade 1 victories, including that huge win in the 99 Breeders' Cup Sprint. What made him so special?
Well, he was a very talented horse. And, like I said, I'm not a guy gallop a lot of horses a mile and a half, but I remember one day at Santa Anita, he was a tough horse to gallop. And he was galloping, and I clocked his last eight going a mile and a half, and it was 11 and change. I mean, he was so talented. And I remember Chris McCarron worked, and Chris rode him for me. And Chris, I was going to work him one day. He said, "What do you want to go in?" And I said, "Chris, I'd like to be about 12 and change, for three quarters of a mile. I said, I want to go about 12 and change, and which is really a pretty fast time for most horses, but he was so talented. So Chris worked him, and he come back, and I said, "What'd you go?" And he said, "I think I might have shaded 12 a little bit." He went like 9-4 or something. Yeah. I mean, he was so talented. And, he came back after in the Derby, he had a separation periosteum layer from the bone, and his shins were sore, so we give him time. And when he came back, at that time, Ernie and I split amicably because, he was wanting his horses on the East Coast, I was on the West Coast. So, he sent him back this way, and they only sprinted the horse, but he was such a good sprinter. He sent, I think he still holds two or three track records, he's such a fast horse, but he could really go two turns. He had no problem going two turns. I mean, he was a very, very talented horse. You can't go a mile and a half, go the last eighth and 11, trying to pull him up, unless you're pretty talented. So
I can just see Jeff sitting at the desk going, "I didn't teach this guy anything."
Some horses make you look dumb. But the afternoon he made you look smart. So.
I'm going to ask you this. Trainers always say, "I don't like fast works. I like to work my horse slow, like him to finish and all that stuff." Then you look at your watch and it's 59 and change. Inside, yeah. Does that make you feel good?
Well, it gives you a little confidence the horse is doing good. Jude, I had a horse at Oaklawn Park one year, and he was a very good horse. I won like three stakes with him there, and Wayne and Jeff owned the horse. So one morning he worked like 58-3. I mean, and I looked at it, I couldn't believe my watch. It was so easy, That usually tells you a horse is doing well. Man, I got blistered. Jeff called me, "The horse can be on the farm. What are you doing?" But he was a very talented horse, and talented horses can do things very easily, as you know. But gosh, it's I don't know. It does give you a little feeling of confidence, but the game's changed a lot, especially with California. When we were in California, everybody worked horses fast, and if you didn't, you couldn't win a race. I mean, because they were fast horses, and everybody was very fit. And so everybody worked horses fast. I think this day and age, because I don't think animals are quite as sturdy as they were back then. I think we've been bred them a lot. They're not quite as sturdy, and they have a few more infirmities than they used to have. Because I used to watch Gary Jones train those guys, and they trained hard, and horses held up. But nowadays, I think guys have gotten it a little bit better. They don't train as fast, the 49, 50 work. Nobody worries about that's a slow work before a race, and I think it's better for the horse. Because like I said, I think horses, when they're fit, you just got to keep them happy.
What do you think about this four times a year stuff, running a horse four times a year?
I don't like that part of it. I think years ago, we used to train less and run more. We used to run. Two-year-olds used to run sometimes 15, 20 times a year,
sure. But
you didn't train a whole lot in between. You didn't have to work a lot, Now it seems like everybody, if you run back too quick, they don't run. But I think but you have to train a lot harder when you got that much span between races. So it's just a different way of doing things. But I think a month is plenty most of the time. Yeah, every horse is different, I think a month is plenty of time between races.
Randy Bradshaw, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on HRRN. Randy, back in, I guess it was around 2000, you had some time that you spent with Satish Shanon and his Padua stables. Tell me about that time in your life.
It was a great time. Satish had called me and asked me if I'd come to work for him at Padua Farm, and it's probably the most stunning farm I've ever been on. I mean, it's immaculate, flowers everywhere. It was a Wayne Lucas deal. Wayne designed the training center and everything there, but it was an absolutely beautiful farm. And Satish was a great guy to work for. You know, he was it was fun because when you had Coolmore and Darley and these guys buying horses, you know, Satish was right in the middle of that. I mean, if he wanted a horse and Wayne told him it was good, I'll tell you what, he'd make them guys have to raise their hand a few more times to get one. I mean, he was tough, but great guy to work for, and I love the guy to this day.
Yeah, you had the chance to be around some good horses there, too. I guess Vindication, Yes It's Vindication, True, come to mind.
Yeah. We bought Vindication right here at the Saratoga Sale, and I thought he was the best Seattle slough I ever seen. And I told Satish that. And he had it's funny how we do vet work and stuff and how people get off horses, you know. So anyway, when we did his vet work, he had some lucency and stuff in his ankles. And so we had all decided that we were going to buy him at a price. And that price was like around $500,000. So consequently, when things got heated up in the sales ring, we bought him for like $4.2 million.
A little over budget.
Yeah, a little over budget. But, you know, he turned out to be a really good horse. He was undefeated, and it wasn't his ankles at the end of the deal. It was actually a high suspensory that did him in. But he was a very, very talented horse, I'll tell you. One of the prettiest Seattle sleuths I've ever seen. They weren't sometimes the prettiest horses, but he was a gorgeous horse.
Randy, take us through that process. When you come to a sale like this, especially a selected sale like this Phasic Tipton Saratoga sale, mm-hmm. take us through your process and the progression of how you go about selecting horses and analyzing them.
Well, you know, it is a select sale, and there's so many good horses here. You know, we usually, like, I'm kind of on Wayne's scale. I score horses from 1 to 10, you know, and you always buy a 6-plus, you know, it's probably a pretty good horse. But here, I mean, there's so many good horses. So you can't buy them all, so you just try to narrow it down to 40. Because out of that 40, some's not going to vet, you know, and you're not going to be able to buy some of them because, you know, I have one of those champagne appetites, too. I love pretty horses, so... but you just have to go through the process and you just have to step up and bid on the horses you like. And a lot of times you're going to get blown out of the water because there's a lot of money here and a lot of really good horses.
We were talking about gut feelings during the sale and how sometimes you look at a horse and you just have a really
to give you
good,
that feeling.
Yeah. And talk about that and when you know how to, when you act on it or when you ignore it.
Yeah. Well, I think... As you know, as a horse trainer, a lot of things we do is gut instinct, no doubt about it, and the way you feel about things. But I think you have to do that to horses. You know, I like a horse with a good head, doesn't make them run, but I like a horse with a really big eye and a sharp eye and give you that intelligence kind of look, you know, and act like they're aware and they know everything that's going on. And I like a horse with a lot of confidence, even though you can develop a horse to later as you're breaking them and stuff to give them confidence, you know. But I like a horse that just has a lot of confidence. A horse like Artax and those kind of horses had that. So I look for that. But, you know, it's a guessing game, Jude. I mean, we all know that, you know, you buy the prettiest horse doesn't make him run. But in the end of things, it's right here. It's the heart that makes them a great horse, you know. And so if you could... If a rich person could figure that out and had a crystal ball, we'd never be able to buy, you know, a regular guy couldn't buy those kind of horses, you know. And that's the thing I love about this game. You know, guys can go out and buy a horse for $5,000, $10,000 and end up being a really good grade one horse, you know. So that's fun. It gives everybody a chance at all levels of the game.
You know, you mentioned Satish coming to a sale like this, and if he liked a horse, he could get that horse or at least make a good run at that horse.
Absolutely.
Somebody else who could do that was Frank Stronach and Adina Springs and still can. Yep. And you spent a lot of time working with Frank, too. Tell me about those years.
You know, Frank was it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of horses. We used to break about 250, 300 yearlings a year. Wow. And we had a two-year-old sale, so we did that. And Frank was always about the horse all the time. You know, it's always about being patient. You know, if horse needed a year, they got a year. And some of those horses didn't need a year, but that's how patient a guy Frank is. But I mean, Ginger Punch, Ginger Brew, all those horses we broke there were great horses, you know. And again, Ginger Punch actually went through a two-year-old thing. We R&A'd her for $40,000. So price doesn't always make the best horse, you know. If you have a better chance when you have all those genes and a lot of great pedigrees. It does give you a little more chance, but it still comes down to heart and a horse's attitude about things that makes a great horse. But Frank was, it was great. Another beautiful farm, you know, no expense spared for the horse, you know. So it was, they were awesome years, really.
Talk about your facility a little bit. You got a pretty nice place.
You know, we have a great place. We really do. It was Bobby Scanlon. You know, a lot of horse people know Bobby. He was a great horseman. Had the farm, and we bought it from his widow, actually, and we put a lot of money into it. It's a fabulous facility. Just to let you know, before him, a guy named Leo Aspura Sr. owned the farm, a great Venezuelan horseman, mm-hmm. and he had over 100 stakes winners come off the farm. When Bobby had it, he had Bernardini and all his horses because he had Coolmore and he had, you know, Godolphin and Darley, all those kind of guys at that farm. So it's a great facility, great racetrack, and you know, when we already had some good horses come off there. One of them was Mastery this year. He arguably would have been the favorite for the Derby if he hadn't, you know, broke down in his last race. But, you know, it's just a great facility. I can't say enough about it.
Randy, what's your greatest training feat?
Guys, that's a good one. I would say family style. And I say that because she was a great mare. And during at the end of her career, I took her to Arlington Park, and she didn't have the best knees, and they were really bothering her at that point. We spent an hour every day with the hose in the bucket, old time stuff, you know, old school, just sitting on the bucket, hosing her knees, and gosh, she won the Matriarch and stuff there that summer, but you know, the next day it was a little hard for her to get out of the stall. I mean, she was just at the end of her career. But what a great mare she was, and she's one of my all-time favorites, you know. And I have a lot of them, and people always ask me, what's the best horse you ever broke or trained? And Jude, I don't know if you remember this horse. It was called, a horse called, he's out of America, called Champagne Jenny. But, gosh, what was it? Now I'm trying to think of his name. But he won the Hollywood Petouri. He's a two-year-old. He ran a mile in 133. And, gosh, I can't believe the name leaves me, but I'll think about it in a minute. But anyway, he was a great horse, and I think Wayne will tell you. I was around, you know, I come in about the time of Landa Lucy. She was a great filly, you know. But those kind of horses, even for a guy like Wayne that gets a lot of horses, and a lot of these guys get a lot of Todd and these guys, those kind of horses come around very, very seldom because they were exceptional. They weren't the norm, you know. So, but. A lot of great horses, a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, even sometimes the ones that don't have famous names, you know, you do a better job on those, or it's harder to get them to win. You feel more vindicated when they win than you do the stake horse because they're ordinarily easier to train.
Yeah. Grand Canyon with that horse.
Oh, Grand Canyon. Oh, I remember him.
Sure. Yeah.
He got hurt in the race and never made it back, you know. But for a two-year-old to run a mile in 133 and change, it's still a world record this day for a two-year-old. But I broke him down at Gene Klein's training center when we were down there, and he's a very special horse. I took a lot of care of it when he came back off when he was injured in the race. And it's just one of those sad deals where eventually we had to put him down, you know, and it kind of broke my heart. I mean, that's the sad part about the sport. You love these animals that you put a lot of time and effort in, and so it was. Those are hard things that you have to do. But anyway, he was one horse that I really thought was as good as any horse I've ever seen.
Randy, you're wearing a ring. Kind of looks like a Super Bowl ring, but it has a Breeders' Cup logo on the side.
Tell it me does. About that. The year was 1988, and we ran three horses in the Breeders' Cup and won. We had Is It True, Open Mind, and they were both two-year-olds, and we had Gulch, who won the sprint that year. And Wayne was so good, you know, they got these rings. I don't even think they give them away now. And so I had Is It True all the time. I had him up here, and Karen had Open Mind, and Jeff had Gulch. So Wayne just gave us each one of the rings, so it's very special, and I wear it all the time.
Yeah, it's cool. I got to wear my first Kentucky Derby ring last night. Anthony Bonomo took it off. I must have been totally obvious because I'm staring at this thing when he sits down at the table, and he just took it off and handed it to me.
Yeah.
And during the course of the interview, I said, well, you know, it was nice of Anthony to give me such a nice gift.
you know how clients are in this business, and the Dobsons are great. I have great clients, Mary Lou Whitney, all these people, but – you know, I Coach Patino is one of my clients, and when he won the championship a few years ago, he ordered me a championship ring. So, it like I said, it's the people you meet in this game that's probably as much important and as much things that I love about the game is the people you meet.
And there's a guy that loves the game, too.
Yeah, absolutely. He loves the game. Yeah, great ambassador.
I think we need more rings. So, like, yeah. I know you don't go to bars because you're too busy, but, like, if you're in a bar and somebody sees that, well, oh, what's that? You know, I think it's a great conversation piece for racing.
Is.
I used to train for Lance Allworth, and when we'd be in San Diego, you know, he's a kingpin down there, and people would see his Super Bowl ring, and they'd want to try it on and stuff. And it's a great conversation piece, and I think racing needs more of that. I think they should give rings for everybody.
We do that. Another thing we need is everybody to bring a young person to our game, because that's how we keep people stimulated in this game, is bring young kids. And that's one thing about Wayne that I love, because when he wins a race, he'll pick a kid out of the crowd and he'll take him in the winner's circle and he'll buy him a win picture and stuff like that. You know, he does that at Oakland all the time. He's there. He does it here, you know, and as trainers, we should do more of that, a little better ambassadors, I think, than we are sometimes. So.
Yeah, he's so cool because he always carries around a fresh Sharpie.
He does. He loves it. And he'll take pictures with anybody. He's not pretentious by any stretch of the imagination. He loves people. He loves kids. And he's a great guy to be around.
Randy Bradshaw here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Randy, do you ever just wake up in the morning and maybe pinch yourself and say, did all this good stuff really happen to me?
You know, I've been blessed. I'll tell you, I have a viewing stand. I sit in the morning and the sun's coming up and I get to watch beautiful horses train, and the clientele I have is great, you know, and I do pinch myself because I'm glad to be part of it and to be around such a great sport. You know, it really is a great sport. I just hope we don't lose any more racetracks and we keep going forward and we all help promote it, because it's a great lifestyle. It really is.
Do you have any family members involved in the business, or is it just you?
No, I do. Actually, all my kids loved it. When they were young, we'd come up here for the summers, you know, at Saratoga and spend time up here, and they've been to every racetrack I've been to. I tell stories about them. You know, Wayne had his vehicle. We had a Jeep, you know, and like 4 o'clock in the morning, kids don't want to be awake. They'd be back in my Jeep sleeping. I'd look up, and they'd be pounding each other. The Jeep would be rolling back and forth, you know. And then I'd look up, and they'd be on top of the roof at Arlington Park racing each other on the barn, up on top of the barn. I mean, I have twin boys in there, and I have great kids. I have 4 kids, and one of them actually works here for 4-Star Sales, Ashley Bradshaw. But, you know, those memories have endeared themselves to those kids, and so they are in the sport. They own pieces of horses with me, and so it's still a family affair, which I love. You know, I love my family being involved in it.
Would you want them to be trainers?
No. No. You know, only because it's a lifestyle that not everybody can do. Not everybody can get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go to work. Not everybody can spend, you know, 14, 16-hour days, you know, doing this sport. So I love it myself, but it's not for everybody to do, and a lot of people can't do it, you know. So I appreciate all my peers out there and guys that do this job, because it's not an easy job for sure.
Your beautiful wife is sitting here listening to us do this show here this afternoon. Was this a racetrack romance? Is that how this all came about, or no?
Yeah, kind of. Actually, I met her at Padua Farm, and it was a kind of a racetrack romance. She exercised horses for me. She started out and galloped horses for Nick Zito for a while in New York, and ended up in Florida after 9/11, and that's how we met. So it's been a great association. And then we got Mrs. Dobson here, Everett Dobson's wife, and they're just awesome. I can't say anything. They're such great people. They're from Oklahoma City. They own part of the Oklahoma Thunder, and you know, he's a great ambassador for the sport. He loves the sport, has a great passion for it. So that's the thing that you love about people that just get in the sport, because it's a lot of work, it's a lot of effort, and it's a lot of money, you know, and people put their money up, you just love them.
You know,
believe me.
It's interesting. You mentioned some very big names over the course of this visit here tonight. And when you think about people like the Dobsons and like Rick Pitino, yeah, they're high-profile people, and quite often I think an average fan would say they're unapproachable. But this is a sport that brings all facets of people together, and it just reunites everybody. It's amazing.
It really does. Another one, like I said, Mary Lou Whitney. You know, I broke horse for her. I broke Birdstone for her years ago, and what's a better ambassador for the sport than Mary Lou Whitney and John Hendrickson? I mean, they're just as great of people as you can ask to be in the sport, and they have such a passion for it, you know. And I just wake up and pinch myself sometimes, and I tell John how much I appreciate him, you know, because they're great people. And the Dobsons have been so good to me. They give me great horses to train. So, and that's the part I love. You know, people ask me if I miss the racetrack sometimes. I do on big days and big races. I love watching the racing from up here, the derbies and all those big races. I don't miss all the day-to-day stuff all the time, you know, but I love those big days and those big races. But my life is so good. I get to get up every day and enjoy what I do, and I have the best clients in the world, and I get to train great horses. I mean, and I send them out, and I don't have to worry that they run bad.
That's right. They're all champions when they leave you.
That's
How did
exactly
that guy
right.
screw it up?
That's right. I did my job. Why didn't he do it? But so anyway, I have the best of both worlds.
That has to be rewarding, to sit home and watch those horses, the ones that you worked with from a very young age, and see them do very well. That
Absolutely.
Has
it gets me off the couch. I'm up there pumping my fist, you know, and yelling and screaming. You know, it rejuvenates you every day.
Randy, so. It's hard to believe that this has been an hour already, but we could spend another 2 or 3 hours visiting with you. But we always like to end the program in the final couple of minutes by asking trainers to tell us something about themselves that people might not know. So we do a little thing. It's called 5 Fast Facts to Know About Randy Bradshaw. And I'm going to ask you 5 quick questions, and you can just go ahead and answer them. They'll be pretty easy. All right. So we'll start. Your favorite meal. If you can have one meal, what's it going to be?
Ice cream.
Favorite flavor of ice cream?
I probably like vanilla and the things you can put on it.
All right. Your favorite thing to do outside of racing?
Fly fishing. And hunting. I like to fly fish and hunt. So.
All right. One characteristic you're going to look for in a horse, what's it going to be?
Heart.
Favorite musical artist?
Doobie Brothers.
Ooh, there we go. Going back Flash a ways.
I would have never guessed that.
No. And your favorite movie?
Probably, I have so many. Probably Dances with the Wolves. I love that movie.
That's a good movie. Great Kevin movie. Costner, a big horse guy, too.
Yeah, I watch that. Yeah, he really is. I watch that movie at least once a year. So.
No, that's great.
So, love the movie.
My cousin's husband produced it, and no I used kidding. To train for Kevin, and they had a horse together.
Oh, yeah, he's a great master for the sport.
Yeah, he
great
loves
guy.
It.
Randy, look, we can't thank you enough for this bit. It has been so enjoyable to hear your story. And, again, we could go on for another hour or two, but really appreciate you being with us here.
It's been a pleasure, Mike. I appreciate you guys. So.
All the best moving forward, my friend.
Thank you so much.
Randy Bradshaw, don't forget, if you missed any portion of this program, all you have to do is go to our website, horseracingradio.net. The podcast of the entire show is available for you to listen to at your leisure. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes, and listen to all of our shows. And don't forget that this Saturday we continue our Saturdays at Saratoga series, all presented by visitbarbados.org. You're going to hear the 4-star Dave coming up live from Saratoga. Plus, we'll mix in the Arlington Million, Beverly D, and Secretariat from Arlington Park. So that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, big weekend this weekend.
Yeah, the entire schedule, SiriusXM channel information and affiliates listed on our website, horseracingradio.net. And don't forget to follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter. All right, for our producers here tonight, that's Lee Delapina in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, my beautiful wife Michelle on site with us. For our special guest Randy Bradshaw and for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.